Story County Board of County Commissioners meeting will now come to order. Any of those of you who have cell phones, if you'd silence those for us now. And if you'll stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, moving along now to item number four. This is discussion of possible action. The approval of the agenda for this date, March the 1st, 2016. Do we have any changes we need to make today, Mr. Whitten?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Staff requests that we move item 12 regarding the approval of the USDA project contract up immediately following board.
Very good. Are there any other changes, any other comments on this, any public comment on today's agenda? Hearing none, call for a motion to approve today's agenda with the one change moving to move up item 12.
I move to approve the agenda for March 1st, 2016, moving item 12 to the front of the agenda.
I'll second that motion.
We move the second to approve this agenda for March the 1st, 2016. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Moving along now to the consent agenda. Is there any public comment today regarding today's consent agenda? Hearing none, call for a motion for approval of today's consent agenda.
I'll move to approve today's consent agenda.
I'll second that motion.
It's been moved and seconded to approve today's consent agenda. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Moving along now to item number seven. This is discussion only. We'll take no action or public comment. These are committee and staff reports. Why don't we start off the this morning with Sherry Nevin, Community Relations?
Nothing today.
Nothing today? Very good. I'll move along now to community development. Mr. Haymore.
Real quick. Just one. I'm not saying anything.
Don't run on that lake.
Jeez, I know.
Don't need more of that.
Just to let you know, the contractor starting this week, started last week on the Gold Hill Depot. So that work's beginning. Take some input. County Manager Whitten asked me to kind of oversee and see if we can get some stairs back on the Sharon House. Sent you some stuff like that. I'll have an open dialogue with what you guys want to see up there and work with the Public Works Director on that. Besides that, we're just pleasantly busy. Do you have any questions for me?
Anything, Mr. Haymore? None. Thank you, Dean.
Thank you.
Okay. Work with the Comptroller's Office, Mr. Gallagher?
Nothing at this time, Mr. Chairman.
From the Sheriff's Office, Sheriff Jerry?
Nothing today.
From the DA's Office, nothing, DA?
Nothing, Mr. Chairman.
Special Counsel, Mr. Morris?
Nothing today.
I went over at Senior Planner, HR, Mr. Osborne.
Secretary of Planning Director.
Is that what it is?
Thank you, Commissioners. I just want to let the public and this board know that on March 3rd, we will have our next Planning Commission meeting. This one will be out in the Highlands. The purpose of this meeting is to discuss the master plan update. At this point, the master plan is almost finished. There's still proofing to do. There's still adjustments to make. There's still one chapter to finish up on cultural resources. But at this point, we're going to all the communities in the county and discussing with our folks, are they comfortable that the master plan meets the goals and objectives that they have been guiding us for the last seven-year period? And that's the purpose of that. In addition, I will ask ultimately on this commission, there will be an agenda item for Jason and I will be sharing with you all of the elements of the master plan that we've been working on and letting this board discuss any concerns they might have as we start nearing the end of the plan. The next thing I just want to summarize is I'm still working with our team on our benefits insurance program with our employees, as we do every year at this time of the year. And at this point, some 30,000-foot items to be aware of is that we're seeing nationwide an increase in insurance costs. And, of course, then we're going to see some adjustments that we'll have to make to our insurance benefits plans, both for employees as well as potential costs. It's our goal to try to provide the most benefits we can that we had in the past with our employees, but we realize the fiscal impacts of that as well, and looking at ways through bargaining and through bidding process with all the insurance carriers that are out there, trying to get them to work with each other and get those benefit costs as low as possible. It's been quite an endeavor. Jesse and I have been really working on that, with really Jesse taking the lead on it. And so I want to give you a little piece on that. And then about March 3rd, we'll have some more information on that, about where that's going to go and what our bottom lines will be. And then we'll be coming back for making the necessary adjustments. Those are my items. Thank you.
Let's see. Also over at planning, Mr. Van Habel, do you have anything for us today?
Nothing
to say.
Thank you.
Good. County Manager
Whitman? Real briefly, we continue to work with the folks at Ames Construction. They're mobilizing their equipment for work on USA Parkway. Dean informed us at a meeting earlier this morning that they're shooting to be in operation no later than April 1st, which is going to make it interesting, because if they're still on their modified target of August of next year, that's 16 months to build an awful lot of highway. So we'll see if that works. But we've reached terms of agreement with them in terms of how much tenant improvement work they're going to do out at the Tri facility in exchange for rent for those 16-plus months. Could extend a little longer. All's going well there. And I will defer to Commissioners McBride and McGuffey for a recap of our time spent in Washington, D.C. last week.
Very good. Do we have any questions with that?
No.
Okay. Out of the clerk's office, county clerk, Steve?
Nothing
today. All right. That concludes item number 7. Move along now to item number 8, board comments. We'll take no action or public comment on this. Commissioner McGuffey, you want to go first?
Yeah. As some of you know, that we had our National Association of County Officers convention in Washington, D.C. It was very informative. It gave us another shot at communicating with our representatives, Senator Heller and Congressman Amadei, and the other group, to give us an update on their progress on getting us a zip code. We've made progress, but we're still kind of stuck in the twilight there. Basically, we've had to start from scratch, and so we've basically caught up to that, our last point of contact as far as trying to get something going on that. There's been some new things that came up that we weren't aware of, and one was that if we try to get another zip code through the Postal Service, whatever application we fill out must be super accurate, because if you fail there, you have to wait 10 years to do it again. So we've got everybody on the same page there to take care of that, just kind of make sure we got our P's and Q's in order. But we're still a little ways from getting there, but we have made some progress. Washington, D.C. was a little kinder this time. We had a few days of good weather before the tornadoes and rainstorms moved in prior to us leaving. But it was a good conference or convention. We did spend a lot of time in workshops and classes, and all to benefit you.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Gilman?
And nothing today, sir. Thank you.
Nothing today? I don't have too much to follow up on Commissioner McGuffey's statement. We did get to sit for the opening ceremony. Was the United States Marine Corps Band was the opening for the session one morning, which was phenomenal. Followed up by Senator McCain from Arizona, and head of the Senate, Mitch McConnell, and we had a couple of secretaries, cabinet secretaries there. We had Vilsack also spoke, and then we had some media personalities as well to give us some comedy relief while we were there. So anyway, it was a well-attended conference, and it was the largest delegation from Nevada. 10 of the 17 counties were represented this year, so it was a real nice turnout. So that's all I have. We'll go ahead now and move on to item number 12. This is discussion and possible action, approval of the Virginia City Sewer Improvement USDA project contract with Far West Engineering for professional services. We'll have Sherry Nevins going to take the lead on this.
Thank you, Commissioner McBride. I have with me today Brent Farr and Lucas Tipton from Far West Engineering. The item before you is approval of the Virginia City Sewer Improvement USDA project contract. This is similar to what we did for the first phase, which was the construction of the wastewater treatment plant. This is moving on to our second phase and planning for additional phases. So you all have been provided with a copy of the contract. We worked through that. I think we took care of any issues that legal counsel had, USDA, our engineer. We all worked together on that for quite some time. So if you have any questions, I've got Brent and Lucas that would be happy to answer anything for you.
Commissioners? I don't have any questions. I'm looking forward to this project. It's been a long time in the coming, and with the help of USDA Rural Development, we're right on track. So, maybe just for the benefit of the audience, maybe you could give us a little bit of a synopsis on the project outline, time frame, and items like that.
Luke is our project manager for this project, so I'll let him make a few comments on that.
Yeah. For the record, Lucas Tipton, Far West Engineering. We're excited. This, what we're calling phase two of the project, is actually phase two through five of the project because of USDA's funding ability and of the needs of Virginia City and Gold Hill. It's going to be about over 15 miles of sewer main that will be installed, much replacing existing sewer mains, as well as hooking the Gold Hill residents up to some lift stations and removing them from a community septic sewer system that they're currently on and that is failing. We're looking with this contract. The project will have approximately 10 months of preliminary work, including cultural resources and archaeology, before going to bid. And we're looking at a construction schedule of approximately 12 to 18 months.
Very good. Joseph, you want to say something?
Yeah, I don't know if you wanted Brent to speak now. He just kind of wanted to give a little overview.
I was going to wait on that just for a second there, because I was going to ask for public comment. If anybody had any questions or concerns regarding this, the audience?
You know, I might chime in for just a minute. The ability to work with USDA and our engineers and BLM to some extent as well to really compress stages 2 through 5, I think is very important to keep our eye on for a couple of reasons. One is, you can never be assured of future funding, you know, down the road. You know, congressional programs come and go. This one may or may not be available years from now. And I think more important, we probably hit the interest rate market at its all-time low, where we would be subject to whatever the prevailing rates would be down the road. So, again, it's a great opportunity that is going to save the ratepayers of the water and sewer system a ton of money.
Exactly. Okay. Once again, I'll ask if there's any public comment. Hearing none? Okay. Give us you want to hear now about the success of Far Engineering and.
Well, thanks for giving me an opportunity to make a couple comments here. Really, this is a message of gratitude today. As it turns out, today, March 1st, was the day our company was incorporated 15 years ago. So it's our 15-year anniversary today. And so this year I'm really trying to make a point of thanking clients for the years of opportunity to work for them. Our company really started with our first contract was in Yerington, Nevada. And they're still a good client of ours today. The city manager's a good friend. And we kind of grew from there, focusing mostly in rural counties and rural communities around Nevada. And it's just been an absolute joy for me in my career to have that opportunity. In Story County, Pat took a chance on our company. It's probably been like 8 years ago or something. It's been a little while. We've had just a great time working with Story County and with staff, and we've had some successes and some challenges here, and it's just been a real opportunity. So I wanted to thank Pat and the commissioners and all the staff that we get to work for the privilege it has been to work here in Story County, and we look forward to more challenges and enjoyment here in the future. So thank you.
Well, congratulations on your success. You know, 15 years, so that's a pretty good track record. The feedback that we get back from staff is the working relationship that Far West has with our staff, and everybody appreciates all the hard work you put into the projects that you're deemed with doing here in Story County. So we want to thank you for that.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything else? Anyone else? Okay. With that being said, commissioners, I'm going to look for a motion to approve the Virginia City Sewer Improvement USDA project contract with Far West Engineering for professional services.
I'll move to approve the Virginia City Sewer Improvement USDA project contract with Far West Engineering for their professional services.
I'll second that motion.
It's been moved and seconded to approve this contract with Far West. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you all.
Today.
Appreciate it.
Okay, we're going to move back to item number 9 now. This is discussion only. This is an update from Ron Radio regarding the WNDD activities. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for coming up today.
For the record, I'm Ron Radio, Western Nevada Development District. Good morning, Chairman, Commissioners. Up here to give you a little bit of an update on the district. This is one of over 600 economic development districts scattered throughout the United States. We're certified by the Economic Development Administration as an economic development district, but to me what's most important is this is a voluntary association of local governments. It's your choice and option to be a part of this. Our governing body is comprised of primarily elected officials. We do have some private sector involvement on our board, but I've always thought, based on my experience, that with economic development, community development in particular, the local governments needed to be involved, because once the improvements are in and once they're installed, then you get to be responsible for operation, maintenance, and replacement of those facilities in the future. The district's been around since 83. So we do have been here. Started out with four counties. Story was originally one of the four. And now we have a total of 9 counties that are within the district. And in this handout, you'll see on the front page where those counties are that are members of the district. We did quite a bit of work in previous years working with local governments to put in infrastructure in publicly owned industrial parks. And there's a list of those on page 3. We do maintain the comprehensive economic development strategy for the district, which is something that we need to do to maintain our certification. Back in 1992, The district was instrumental in receiving an EDA grant for the economic feasibility of the reconstruction of the V&T railway. And I know that the engineer that we were working with several years ago was very fond of telling me it took about 12 years to get from the feasibility start to construction. And when the original construction was done, it was done in about 10 months, which is the time that Brent was talking about to do your cultural resources study. So times have changed. We did do the Lake Tahoe Basin Prosperity Plan, which is rather unique in that it was all of the California and Nevada counties in the Tahoe Basin that did a study in 2010. And then there was a spinoff, which is now called the Tahoe Prosperity Center, working on additional projects. We do have a business microloan program that we started in 2012. It's very small at this point. They do take these kinds of programs, take a while to develop and have in place, and a little bit of time to grow. And then we're also doing the Nevada Economic Development Conference, which will be coming up in September of 2016. I did want to focus today on two items. Number one is that I talked about the Comprehensive Economic Development Strategy, and that is an overview of a strategy for economic development throughout the nine counties, but there is also an element in that document, which was completed in 2014, to allow for local entities to include projects and initiatives in the SES. It's becoming a little bit more important, maybe a little bit more useful, because with the 2014 Farm Bill, what happened for USDA Rural Development is there is a section called 6025, which applies to anybody making an application to USDA Rural Development. If you can cite some projects or initiatives or goals or strategies out of the SEDS, you can gain additional points. I do know the USDA did this back in December. I had a few conversations with Herb Shedd about a business and industry loan project they had up at the lake. And they're also doing one over in Fallon. So we are in the process of updating the SEDS. We will be sending out an electronic update format to both Dean and to Austin to have them as staff start to work to develop that. And then once that's done, they'll bring those back to the commission for approval to include in the SEDS update. And as former board president, do you have any comments, Dean?
Just one of the things we wanted to add in on the SEDS is the Lockwood Interchange. And then we're starting to talk to Sparks and the new chairman, Ted Lawson, about Walton Way and some interconnections going through on the other side. And the USA Parkway has affected the whole area. And so we want to make sure we get that all added in. Plus, we're working on a regional transportation system. We don't want the RTC one, but a regional that takes all the rules and everything else out. And we're trying to get some funding, about $225,000 from PennDOT to work on that too, to look at a regional.
Why wouldn't you want to work with the RTC?
We work with the RTC, but we want it to, it's not the RTC's plan, we want it our plan. You follow me?
Yeah, but the RTC brings a lot of valuable resources and tools to the table.
And they're professional in that, but we want to make sure they don't forget the rural areas. Yeah. Can
I ask you a question?
Yeah, go ahead.
Ron, can you define agribusiness?
Agribusiness is your definition of agriculture, which would be the irrigated, the alfalfa, the dairies. And it's also a little bit broader than it includes wineries, distilleries, microbrews, because they all use agricultural products to be able to make their product for sale. And when we did the Stronger Economies Together program in 2012, we had an agribusiness work group. And what they did is they worked
to develop legislation in the, I believe, the 2015 session to remove the restriction on not allowing Clark and Washoe counties to have wineries because there was a 100,000 population limit. So that got removed. This is kind of an example of some of the things that we've done in the past by working together with a wide variety of partners. And it does take a wide variety of partners. And as a matter of fact, at our last board meeting on the 10th of February, Ed Lawson from Sparks, who's on the city council, was talking about a meeting he had with Commissioner Gilman and the 50-mile radius map around TRI. And Ed told the board, he looked at that, and he looked at it, and he realized how many local governments are within that 50-mile radius, and they're all going to be impacted in one way or another about the economic development that's going on in the region. And his final statement was, we have to, as local governments, work together to address some of these issues. So that's what we're trying to do with the NDOT proposal on looking at transportation planning beyond just the RTC, because right now Washoe County is limited basically to Washoe County. It's a Carson City RTC, but because of the structure of the way they are and their statutory limitations, they are kind of restricted. What we talked about at the district is looking at transportation needs beyond those two counties. But you're right, Pat, we're going to have to coordinate in some way, shape, or form with what we're doing with what they're doing.
Yeah, Paul. I guess it strikes me as questionable as to why agribusiness, at least as far as not the wineries, I understand that, or the distilleries, but as far as the true crop growing goes, I remember a rather, we're in the desert, we all know that. Water is a very valuable commodity, and I remember a few years back a very spirited conversation I had with a county manager of one of your member counties that's heavily into agriculture and, quite frankly, are often obstructing our efforts to procure water. And the question was simple: on 1,000 acres of agricultural land, alfalfa, pick your crop, I don't care, how many jobs can you create? Because this really, if we're into economic development, it's about jobs. That's the common denominator there. And the answer back was anywhere from 2.5 to 5 jobs. Now, on the same 1,000 acres, we can take Tesla and create 6,000 to 6,500 jobs, which, by the way, Tesla needs water. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, focusing on that portion of the agribusiness definitely works against the best interests of some of the rest of us, probably most of the cities that are participants, and I'd just raise the question.
Okay. Also, as part of the agribusiness is alternative crops. Looking at crops that are going to be, they could be grown here and would not take as much water as alfalfa. I think everybody recognizes, even the, you know, the alfalfa producers recognize the amount of water that they need to be, to use to grow their crop. One of the things we're looking at, which ties back to the microbrewery situation, is, you know, hops. Apparently, hops can be grown in large part of the region. So, if we look at those alternative crops as part of the whole agribusiness section, then that may help alleviate that problem. Maybe not in the short term, but perhaps in the long term. The other thing too, in relation to the conference, one of the sessions that we're having is called AgriHoods. And this may be an old concept. I've just become kind of aware of it here since the first of the year. But in a housing development or a condo development, you might have a common area normally, and you're going to have grass. But with the agri-hood concept, you change that common area into a food-producing area. It cuts down on the need for additional water. People can have maybe a community garden to live there, or if you wanted to, you could lease that out to a small producer that would be able to go to farmers markets or maybe start getting into some of the restaurants. So agribusiness, like everything that we do or seem to do, It's not just a silo or isolated by itself, because in our discussions that we've had for sessions, energy becomes a big part of this, as well as distribution and transportation. So we're looking at a lot of interconnected and connected issues and trying to break down the silos and get people together to talk about what they need to be talking about. That's kind of an update. Again, that conference will be coming up in September. The last page has our staff contact information. And do you have any questions at this point?
I got one comment that we're working on.
Can you pick him up on your microphone there? Or
we have to... Yeah, I can.
Okay.
Austin's been working on the bus system out there, B-Ride or whatever it's called, and it's working good. But because one of the things is they subsidize on RTC on that system. We're trying to get NDOT to do that same system to subsidize, because they won't do it when they're coming from other part of other counties besides Washoe County. So, okay.
Thank you, Dean. Mr. Chairman, if you're fine with it, I'll just make a couple comments on this. This isn't my show, so I'm not going to steal your presentation here. But what these, you know, the items are that are in this, you look at all those goals and objectives for facilities use, for interlocal work with our region, all of those things are in the master plan. And definitely I'd like to work with these folks here in integrating those items of the master plan into the SEDS. That is a 7-year process that has gone with all of our, everybody in this county, you know, from the citizens to businesses to the historic district, Virginia City Tourism Commission, staff, other agencies, other jurisdictions, all different types of interests in the county. And it's a strong document that really sets our goals and objectives for facilities uses and for land uses and for economic development and transportation. And to give an example, that master plan recommends that we coordinate with our regional partners such as the RTC and NDOT. Jason and I have spent quite a bit of time working with the RTC and NDOT and Campo from Carson City and others. In looking at trying to blur those lines between the agencies to create reasonable transportation in the area. I think what Dean was alluding to initially, as far as some things haven't worked in the county, we recognize those. Some bus systems and some types of fixed systems don't necessarily work as they were at the time, but there might be ways that we can make them work. There might be ways that we can do things like these van pools. We believe there's over 200 people not on the highway system as every single day, simply because of the number of vans that we now have for BPSI and the RTC folks out at the industrial park. That's a big number, and I believe that number's higher, but I'm not comfortable saying too high, because I haven't been able to look at all those actual raw data so far. But definitely this is a great opportunity for us to work interregionally and make sure that we're consistent with what's going on in the region and vice versa. Thank you.
Thanks. I guess my final comment would be that, you know, we're in a great position out here in northern Nevada with the growth opportunities that are here. And the growth opportunities, I think we all recognize, do not recognize county and city boundaries. And so I think that's what Ed was talking about at our board meeting, was about we have to work together, or the local governments have to work together. So thank you for this morning, and if you have any questions.
Do you work in conjunction with EDON or the Northern Nevada Development?
Yes. Yes. We work with EDON. I was involved with the EPIC committee that prepared that report. We're going to have Mike Kasmirsky come in and do an update on that report, because they've got some metrics, some measurements they can use. We do work with EDON and NNDA and all of the other economic development authorities that are within the region. The one thing we do not do is direct business recruitment like the EDAs do. But if we get calls, and we have, where a firm may be calling in and we want to locate or look at Northern Nevada, I'll generally ask them if they have a specific region they're looking at or a specific county, and if they are, then we'll refer them to the appropriate county. Otherwise, we refer them to everybody.
Thank you.
We're more in the realm of trying to get people to work together because none of these issues are isolated.
That's good. We're the organization that goes out and tries to get the funding to help their communities put in the infrastructure that they need. We go out and get EDA funding. That's what this organization does. And that creates jobs, lends money to small businesses.
I have another question. Go ahead. You mentioned, and I get it, that, you know, if you have a publicly owned industrial park, that you find some infrastructure monies. Would TRI be eligible, acknowledging that it is privately owned, but the GID, these water sewer infrastructure responsibilities, which are on the horizon from what I understand, would they be eligible because it's GID managed, which is a public entity?
It would be GID through the CAM.
Okay. So the answer is yes?
Yes. Because the GID is a public entity.
Okay.
Now, we could not do anything with the EDA money funding, for example, with Tahoe Reno Industrial Center, but you can do it with the GID.
Yeah, I'd like to follow on, Pat. We've been working on a project with Dean for the pipeline installation, and there are monies that have been identified that may well be of assistance.
Yeah. Anything else?
And although we might not have any agriculture on the river any longer, we do have a brewery here in Virginia City now.
Yes, you do.
Darn good.
All right, Ron, thanks for your presentation. Thanks for spending your time with us today.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Ron.
Next up is item number 10. This is discussion and possible action. Approval of auditor's recommendations pertaining to the Story County audit report for the period ended June 30th, 2015. Mr. Gallagher.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Hugh Gallagher, Story County Comptroller. This is the part of the annual audit that actually recommends the actions that we take based upon the audit of financial statements, which were presented to you during the last meeting. And there is a state requirement, which is NRS 354, that requires that the auditor list those funds which are have not which their budgets have been over or under what was actually spent, so the expenditures were over what that was budgeted for the most part. They require a written recommendation of what we're going to do about it. I actually look forward to this because we may be the only government that does anything similar, because normally some counties just say, you know what, we're just going to over-exaggerate our revenues, under-exaggerate our expenses, and therefore we'll be fine. And nobody goes through that. Through your lead, we have been very stringent at saying that we're going to operate this as a business, and we're not going to overestimate revenues, nor are we going to overestimate expenses. And yes, there are those times when things happen that there are going to be shortages or overages in the budget for expenditures because of events, and we can't explain them. So with that, I will go to the auditor's recommendations, which you might have before you. First one is concerns our community development department. I will read this. Our community development department is the heart of all activity pertaining to business license, permit, plan review fee for Story County. With the unanticipated new development in the Tahoe Regional Industrial Park as a result of the 2014 special legislative session involving Tesla Motors, among others, building inspections, building licensing, and permits suddenly increased beyond comprehension. Staffing requirements were scheduled to meet the demand, were scheduled to meet the demand for the building inspections and plan reviews. In addition, A departure of one building inspector required additional overtime by staff. Administrative staff also had to be increased and trained, which accounted for some of the additional overtime, plus the additional influx of paperwork required for the permitting and licensing. And this has to do with a function within the community development deal, which had to do with salaries and benefits. We have looked at this for a long time. They have been this influx is absolutely amazing, and they have done it in a great style, and with the least amount of overtime that expenditures expended. We will. I'm going to get with Dean here during the budget session. Hopefully, we'll get a plan to reduce the, or at least reappropriate or reschedule, or if there is a need for an additional hire to knock down the overtime, we certainly will do that.
Can I jump in here just on this one? Because I think it sets an important tone. The auditor is required to make these recommendations by GAAP, but the absurdity of it is the language he's forced to use is we recommend monitoring expenditures. Dean's office is one of the most closely monitored offices out there, and every one of these decisions that Hughes outlined was sent through a painstaking analysis by Dean, by Stacy, by his team, and then over to Hugh, to Austin, and to me. And on the surface, it presents or appears that we're not monitoring, when in fact we are, and you will continue to see items like this in subsequent audits where we are flexing the ability of not only Dean's office but the fire district as well, these two key components that, have to be out there essentially now 24/7 to stay up with these projects.
Our next is the Virginia City Tourism Special Revenue Event Fund. It actually exceeded revenue projections by $192,641. However, expenditures exceeded appropriations by $100,428. And that letter from Mr. Dotson is in your packet. I will say that there is during the process this year for the budget, there will seem to be another a deficit. And it has to do with a lot of things. I mean, number one, there is a decrease in their gaming revenue because of a landlord who failed to procure a business or a gaming license. But and it's something for review, not this coming fiscal year, but for the following. We are working on efforts to get Denny and the Tourism Commission a consistent source of revenue by which they can depend upon, so we're going to go forward with that program. Next is drug court special revenue. This is basically an in and out account. We collect fees from fines and forfeitures, and we'll only expend it by a judicial mandate from the district court, and so consequently there was a huge expenditure that was required by the district court, and it not only put them in a negative ending fund balance, but it put them on the list. And so something that when I was looking at this and kind of investigating what's happening with this, there are a lot of fines that are out there that could be recorded. However, the collection upon those fines is very difficult, and it was not so in the past. However, I think it was the Department of Public Safety put a kibosh on the methods that we use to go ahead and get some of these fines coming back to Story County, and hopefully somewhere down the line that can be remedied. But that is what happened primarily with the drug court. Engineered accident special revenue fund, again, is an in and out account. We receive revenues from taxes, ad valorem taxes, and that goes out depending upon the mandates of pretty much the state of Nevada. There was over expenditures there, and they too have a negative ending fund balance. So The process is now is that you're not going to get any funds until we receive the money. Obviously, we can't have any funds in there. If we have funds, we will expend the money. But if there is a requirement to for funding and we don't have that ability to pay, we're not going to put ourselves in a negative any fund balance. The next one was is our USDA fund. USDA fund, again, was a special revenue fund designed for the wastewater treatment plant, and was designed for the purchase of the ambulances and fire apparatus for 474 Fire District. This is, again, an in-and-out account. Timing differences being as they may, we had expended too much money and received not enough money to have those expenditures, and so consequently, those timing differences related to a negative ending fund balance, which will be corrected this year. So all of those things should equal out. We've got a little bit of work to do as far as the mandates for indigent accident and also for the drug court, but we'll be able to clear those up. In addition, there were several several recommendations by Pringle CPA that concerned some items which I presented to you during the last the approval of the audit. And I won't go into those for the most part, with the exception of probably the last one. And the last one says we recommend a cutoff date of August 30th be established to strictly enforced for all payables, receivables, and journal entries by any governmental employee to prevent complications with the audit. And I concur with this. We had initially tried to make our cutoff at July 15th so we could sew things up and get ready for the audit, close the books and do that. In a normal business, a private business, you probably know what your payables are for that particular period of time. You know what your receivables are. It just doesn't happen in government. I mean, we're 1, 2, maybe 3 months behind on any revenue source that we're getting from the state of Nevada. In particular, with the last payment for centrally assessed, which totaled about $2 million, we didn't get that till way into this fiscal year. And so consequently, I've got to amend that. We're going to go to the August 30th date. Consequently, a lot of this stuff will not be reoccurring. We will be able to find it. We will be able to make the adjustment into the appropriate fiscal year, and thereby hopefully knock down some of these recommendations that the auditor has.
May I ask a question?
Go ahead.
Do you see that as slowing down the timing of the audit even further?
Now, I'm thinking that's not. I don't think that will happen. I think that on August 30th, if they start August 30th, they can still get done in a very short period of time, I believe. They can still do certain things within the audit, such as, you know, a lot of the cash reporting and things of that nature. There's a lot of review that goes on. Prior to that, of course, all of our minutes and whatever has to be reviewed, a lot of things of those nature, and some internal control studies. So I don't see that as a major deterrent. They could still start the audit, the end of the audit, but it just gives us the ability to say, geez, that just came in, move that back. That's a simple journal entry, and it will be done before the ending date, which means the ending date, they haul out of here and head for the reporting date. So I don't say it.
Okay, well, this may be better addressed in the next agenda item, but I would suggest that we take a look at what date is spelled out in statute for taxation's requirements, that we have our audit approved and submitted. The last at least 3 years, and I want to believe longer than that, we have been late, inordinately late, and there's a never-ending series of reasons, justifiable ones. Somebody's sick at Pringle. They're a small firm, but I think subsequent years there needs to be a clear-cut understanding that by adopting this date, by approving them, I guess, that's who you're recommending, for the next year, you know, doesn't change the fact that we want our audit by this date. We're not going to accept, you know, another late submittal process like we have in the past.
True. And I agree. The audit this year would have been on time, with the exception of one of these things that occurred, and that's the centrally assessed deposit. That was just too critical to, so that restatement, instead of changing just, even though it is just one figure, affected probably about 26 pages in the report. In the previous year, it was delayed because of a county resident filing a complaint with the Board of Accountancy, State Board of Accountancy, because they didn't think some of the methods were correct. At that point in time, none had stopped because they had to go before the board. They were cleared before the board, and consequently, that was it. I don't anticipate this happening. I will, we'll depend. We'll go on with the selection of the auditor. But they understand fully that. And the state is going to require a little more now because there are so many being late for so many reasons. But I'm sure that the due date that we have before the commission, before the state of Nevada, will be amply, will be okay. There may have to be a special session for this because we only have one meeting in November and one in December, usually. Hopefully we can fall that. Maybe not on the first one, but the second one, we'd be able to get it done.
Good questions for Ms.
Now, you mentioned the $2 million payment was like 3 months late. Is that what I heard?
It was due in April. That last quarter payment for the fiscal year 2015 was supposed to be made in April, and it was not made till late July. Okay. And that was.
So it's actually in the next fiscal year.
Yeah. And so, and it's a lot of things with when the state of Nevada takes time to calculate these things. I'm not going to say it's inordinate, but it takes time for them to calculate and distribute. Okay, they've got to get all these things into on the sensitive assess side, and then they distribute. There's a lot of things that, you know, our sales taxes, our quarter cent sales taxes that are sitting out there that are 2 months late. And really, we want to be able to put that into the fiscal year that it belongs and not make a guess or an estimate. I mean, because there's not a real good way to estimate any of that.
Would it be beneficial to bite the bullet and just take that money and put it in the fiscal year you received it in?
Well, there's the requirements of the statement is that and as far as the general accepted accounting principles, if it is in fact a receivable in that fiscal year that should be at all possible costs or all possible efforts be put in that fiscal year. Because that gives you the timing of that year and what you should have received. So we book it as a receivable. We do this anyway on a lot of stuff. We'll book it as a receivable. And if we know what the income is, so the income statement reflects what that fiscal year looked like.
Well, this has been going on for 3 years?
No, this one just occurred this year. I mean, and this was a $2 million deposit. Normally, it's okay. I mean, it just happened this year that the Department of Taxation, through something, didn't give it to us in April and give it to us in July.
What's been going on for 3 years plus, Jack, is we've not met audit deadlines. So yeah. That's this year's reason. Last year, as you referenced, was, you know, a complaint
the prior year was probably some issues with fixed assets or something. That's all.
Okay. Thank you.
The state statements are always going to be in arrears because businesses always have a month of report. And so that's a month out. Then by the time the state goes ahead and gets all of their paperwork, calculates everything, it's at least another month or before they do distribution. So the state is always going to be in arrears. There's just no way of changing that. So as long as they're in arrears, we're going to have to be doing journal entries to go ahead and make, you know, pick it up. Do you have any questions, Mr. Gilman?
No.
Right. Any public comment on this matter? Ms. Bard? And then you, Mr. Phillips, you had her hand up first, and you can come up next.
Nicole Bard, Story County resident. As Hugh was going through the recommendations and then our county's response to it, when he was talking about the VCTC saying that you know, we really need to look at the stabilizing the revenue stream because you know, they rely on the room tax and the gaming and then the sales quarter cent sales tax, I didn't hear him talk about expense control. If you look at when VCTC was established, it had a general fund of about $650,000. That is now down to plus or minus 300,000. There's an expense problem. This is things that we look at and go, well, you know, we can either increase revenue to solve the problem or look at increasing revenue and also look at what we need to do from an expense side. And I would suggest to you that one of the things that you need to look at is the expense side with VCTC, because drawing down that general fund from 650,000 down to 300 and dropping isn't just a function of the capital expenses that they've had in buying materials for the fairgrounds. They bought a building, the Black and Howell building, which is never going to be used, which counties had to come in to bail them out by building a little observatory thing. So I suggest that the oversight of VCTC with respect to how they budget and what they spend on the expense side also needs to be emphasized, not just let's increase taxes so that we can spend more. Okay? Thank you.
May I respond?
Yes, go ahead.
You know, I don't think it's a fair statement to say the building will never be used for. The opportunity presented itself. It was properly approved. And for the record, the county hasn't yet stepped in to bail anybody out with a pocket park or a observation deck. That project may or may not happen.
Okay, so absent the county doing something with that property, the VCTC doesn't seem to have the resources now or in the foreseeable future to do what was proposed to be done at the time of purchase and when it was presented to the board and approved.
Well, that might not necessarily be true either, Nicole, because if there's avenues of building a new structure there, a new community center, not community center, but a new visitor center there, there's always the option of selling the existing building to pay for that. So there's a lot of options out there to do these things. And going back a little bit further on, you know, on losing the arena where all the events like camel races were held in the past, by losing that, the only way that they could continue to put these events going forward was to do this capital outlay to do the improvements to the new arena. So
I have no problem with that. That was an investment that is paying off. I'm just saying that if you look at the history of the budgets for the VCTC over the last 5-6 years, forgetting about the capital expenditure for the arena, the building may have been a mistake.
Keep in mind also that the reason there was a $600,000 fund in balances there was because of some phenomenal things that went on down in the River District. Now, for some things to come back like that, maybe those revenues get pushed up again. Or, in fact, if they come up, maybe these other projects can be completed.
I'm just suggesting that, except with the exception of the arena, that you may want to do stronger governance on the expense side of what VCTC is doing not just the capital expense, but in regular day-to-day expenses. That's all.
Thank you. Mr. Phillips, you're next.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Mark Joseph Phillips, Story County resident. Speaking to agenda item number 10, approval of auditor's recommendations. May I please get a copy of the Denny Dotson letter that would be in your packet? I just checked the public packet. It's not there.
I don't have my idea, so. You want to write this minute?
Sure.
I don't know if I have it.
I got it.
You have it?
Okay, for the record, I'm looking. Okay, it's the 6th of February is the date to Hugh Gallagher from Denny Dotson, director of the VCTC. Okay, this is almost a month old. Thank you. Is this what you all have?
Mark, nobody has it, so I'm going to make copies. Nobody has it in their packet, so I'm
going to
make copies.
Oh, no.
Hand it over.
Yeah. You'll get it back.
Okay. Anything else, Mr. Phil?
No.
Okay, thank you.
It's kind of worrisome. She's asking for more oversight.
Any other comments, public comments regarding items number 10, approval of the auditor's recommendation?
Yeah, I'm not supposed to.
Oh no, I was just waiting for the letter.
That's question on whether or not should we review NRS before we go ahead and approve the auditor's recommendations for June 30th cutoff date?
I'm fine with moving it to August 30th. It's just they're going to have to, it's the auditor's recommendation, in my opinion, and I'll ask for a condition when we appoint the auditor. The auditor's going to have to get the audit done on time, no matter what the change is.
All right.
Yeah, and I'm not sure what the NRS is about that. So.
Okay.
It could be a taxation requirement that's not an NRS.
Okay.
So we're good.
Okay. Once again, I'll ask, is there any other public comment regarding this? Hearing none, commissioners, look for a motion to approve the auditor's recommendations.
I'll move to approve auditor's recommendations pertaining to the Story County audit report for the period ending June 30th, 2015.
I'll second that motion.
It's been moved to second to approve the auditor's recommendations. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion carries unanimously. Moving along now to item number 11, this is discussion and possible action. Selection of David A. Pringle, CPA, LTD, as Story County Auditor for the fiscal year ended June 30th, 2016. Mr. Gallagher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The current auditor, David Pringle, CPA Limited, has, in my opinion, done an excellent job of providing audit compliance, accounting and auditing advice and financial statement presentation to Story County. Their work is professionally done. Their rate is more than reasonable. In addition, any questions or meetings that they may need or we may have with them is accomplished pretty much at no cost. I will say this, I agree with Pat Whitten. There are certain circumstances within the last couple of years that it probably was probably beyond their ability to get this thing done because of certain things that happened. However, that does not excuse the fact that they should not be able to get this done in future periods. Regardless of the August 30th cutoff date, which we may want to go to for expenditures and revenues and journal entries, all this is saying is that we'll close the books effectively probably on August 1st. It does not say that we're not going to start looking at other income and expense items to go ahead and put that back into that fiscal year. We're just going to sew up the books instead of the 15th of July, which, you know, it's normal for a business deal. It's not normal for probably a county government. We'll still be able to get that accomplished. And if we want to put that in the caveat of their stuff, that's fine with me. They'll be more than obliging. They work hard at this, and, you know, if that's the caveat, then that's fine with me.
And I agree with everything our comptroller has said, including pricing. We have looked at ballpark pricing that other jurisdictions are paying, and it's much higher than this. And we do have probably more funds, I think, than almost any other entity that's out there, just by the nature of the operation. I would suggest that, you know, there be a condition in the approval of our comptroller's recommendation that a message be given to both Mr. Pringle and Mr. Barchi that the expectation is that the audit will be delivered on or before, and for approval, on or before the dates outlined either in NRS or in taxation's requirements, barring highly unusual circumstances like at least the one that was mentioned where the complaint is outside everybody's control. I mean, there's nothing you can do once that bell is rung. But I would say barring unusually critical circumstances, and those aren't the right words I'm searching for, and if there are such circumstances that are going to delay the audit, that Mr. Pringle or Mr. Barchi come before this board prior to the due date to explain that so it's clearly apparent both to the board and to the public.
Mr. Gallagher, do you know, do they audit other government entities as well?
I don't know the answer to that question, Mr. Chairman. Okay. I really don't.
I'm just wondering because I know that in the private sector, it's crunch time like right now for these guys. Everything has to be done by April 15th or 16th, depending on however it falls. And it's like when so much burden is put up on a company to do so much in a short period of time, the window of opportunity to get everything done, I know it's going to be cumbersome for companies. So I was just wondering if they had other governments that they were doing the exact same thing for.
You know, I believe they do not a fair amount, but an amount of GISs, I think, that are out there. This audit engagement for them is in excess of 35 special revenue funds and probably in excess of 35 departments within one fund. So it's a big project.
And really now the nature of what they're doing with the way we've enveloped the VCTC into the operation, this is really at least three audits packaged into one between the county, well, actually more than that if you include water and sewer, but between the county, the fire district, which in many jurisdictions has its own separate audit and its own separate costs, and the Tourism Commission as well.
We were very, very busy last year. Not only the switching of the Tourism Commission from a separate local government back into being a major component of Story County, but we also had all of the USDA stuff. I mean, the amount of work that went into all of that stuff, and plus the reclassification of a major special revenue fund within the county, which was the fire department, into a 474 fire district. So there was a lot of work in making sure that all of those things came across and that they were auditable for the most part.
Mr. McGuffin, do you have any questions for you?
No.
That's no. Take public comment on this item?
I do agree with Mr. Witten.
that there should be a provision to make them be on time.
Okay. Ms. Barr, you had your hand up.
Nicole Bart, Story County resident. This is the third year I'm going to stand here and ask you to think about putting this out to bid to another auditing company. Pringle, God love them, have grown up with Story County. But given the discussion that y'all just had regarding the lateness of the audit, which half of it is our fault, some of it is their fault, the other part is just stuff happens. My question to you is, you know, you get what you pay for. Their fees may be reasonable, but if they're not able to handle our business, what are we getting? Is it a risk to us? Given the growth of the county and the increasing complexity both of the revenue sources of the county as well as the way that we're going to have to start to account for these things, my question to you is, are they big enough, are they stable enough to handle what we're going to be, not what we've been, not what we are. So if they're having these kinds of problems and have had these kinds of problems before, how are they going to help us as we become more complex, especially in the face of increased state reporting requirements because of the kinds of companies that we've got in TRI, as well as the kind of requirements that the companies in TRI, the big ones, are going to have of us, which will extend into our financial business. Can Pringle lead us, not just follow us and audit us? I'm not expecting a response. I've asked this question.
Well, I'm going to give you one because I think one of your first questions is, what are we getting? We're getting a clean audit, and that's the most important thing that we're paying for, is getting a clean audit and recommendations on how to make things better going forward. So there's an issue with tardiness in there. I don't think tardiness is a deal breaker on this. Maybe other people do. But if the end result is, you know, it wouldn't be recommended by staff if they didn't think that these guys were doing their job. So I think going back to your first question, what do we get? A nice clean audit. And I think that's the most important thing that we can ask for.
All right. And I'm just saying, you've also got an obligation to look at, and we're already more complex this year than we were last year, we'll be more complex next year than we are this year. Can they handle the business?
Well, there's not something to say that we're going to be more complex next year than this year. As Mr. Gallagher explained, we cleaned up a lot of things, but 474, the USDA things. Now these things are all in place, so they should be streamlined for the audit for next year, not reinventing the wheel once again.
Okay, I'll see you in a year and see what happens.
Okay.
And I need to speak to
I hope you do. So.
Yeah, I need to speak to this as well, and I know our comptroller will concur. I'm not questioning Pringle CPA's ability to keep up with this. Or follow us. They are keeping up with us. That is not the issue. The issue is a perpetual annoyance of mine, quite frankly, that we're struggling to meet these deadlines. They are capable. They have never failed us in any way. And, oh, by the way, to the best of my knowledge, and I'll put a 95% certainty on this because I'm sure our legal counsel will have to double-check me, but this is a professional service that is not subject to going out to bid, as you proposed. The most we're going to get is an RFQ process, not an RFP process. Mm-hmm. So we're going to see a bunch of qualifications from some of these other CPA firms, Grant Thornton and the rest of these guys, that we already know what their qualifications are. That's not going to be helpful in the process. So putting out to bid is not, in my opinion.
I probably used the wrong language. I'm just saying shop for other vendors, that's all. Do another evaluation on what might we be getting differently, better, more quickly, more automated. I've had auditors that actually, you know, do things that are done quarterly for us so that we don't miss deadlines. I mean, there are things that can be done, not just to fix the timing issues, but to lead us, not just follow us.
You propose to do that at the added expense to the taxpayers of the county?
Everything's an expense. It's just a matter of what the return on that investment is. If the return on the investment is, it helps us better do our own internal processes, if it helps us do things more on time, if it helps us, if it provides us or buys us or gives us a capacity to help you with the kind of reporting that I know that you have to do with the state and everyone else with all these abatements that we've got, I'd say, as a taxpayer, okay.
So
yeah.
$30,000 to $35,000 process right now, whatever it may be, can become a $50,000 to $75,000 process, and that's fine, just so we hit a deadline.
No.
I mean, that's really, that's really the issue.
I don't know. But you had made the comment, or someone had said, how do we, or do they do auditing for other counties? You know, my question to you is, for our size and our complexity and our revenue and expense ratios, I mean, what are we paying for the audit, and what is a county like Washoe or Lyon or any of the other comparable counties paying for their audits? Are we significantly under and getting more? Fine. Great. But if they're paying about the same and getting more, I wonder, that's all.
Thank you. Once again, I'll ask, is there any other public comment regarding this? Okay. So, Commissioners, upon the recommendation of the staff, selection of David A. Pringle, CPA, LTD, as Story County Auditor for the fiscal year ending June 30, 2016. We got a motion on that?
I'll make the motion to approve Auditor's recommendation pertaining to the Story County Audit Report for the period ending June 30, 2015, with a request that they address a timely production and finish of the audit, and if that is not possible, to address this body and show cause as to why they did not perform within a proper appropriate time.
I'll second that motion.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded with the revision stated out by Commissioner Gilman. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Great. Thank you, Mr. Gallagher. Moving along now to item number 13. This is discussion of possible action. The second reading of ordinance number 15-267. Amending Story County Code Title 8 Health and Human Safety by adding Chapter 8.01 Nuisances and providing the uniform process for abating all the different nuisance complaints in the code. The amendment also changes the existing nuisance procedures and other parts of the code to be consistent with the new chapter and provides for other properly related matters. Mr. Morris.
Thank you, Commissioner. Robert Morris for the record. I was just going to give you a brief overview of what I expect to do today. It's the second reading, which is the public hearing on the ordinance itself. This is when people should be able to discuss the issues in it. I called out four issues that we had discussed somewhat in the workshop, and I just wanted to make sure that everybody understood how the ordinance is dealing with certain things. There are some specific sections in the ordinance that I was going to point out after we go through the general discussion. I was going to suggest that if there are substantial changes or if we change the way the process works in any significant way, I'd recommend continuing the approval of this for 2 weeks to a date certain. We wouldn't have to republish or anything, but that would give me the opportunity to put the text into the ordinance to make sure the one that you're approving is basically what's going to go in the code. So let me just briefly go through these items, and it's in the staff summary. The first one is about the complaint process and how that's initiated. The way that it's set up now, the county inspector or authorized inspector has to receive a complaint to go forward. And there was a little bit of discussion about whether you wanted county employees able to go out and on their own look for items to cite or nuisances to cite. The way it's written now is that it has to be based on a complaint. The other thing that I've added in there is Basically, when somebody makes a complaint about a nuisance, we're going to ask that they do it in writing and we know who it is. And that would be so we don't have anonymous complaints about what's going on. It's also handy if there is a court case that we know who the person is. There are protections that we can give to somebody that makes a report until the actual action is been completed, but then they would have to be known to whoever would like to figure out who complained about them to get the nuisance action started. So I'm just the other thing that comes up sometimes is if you do allow county staff to initiate complaints, is that it does raise issues of selective enforcement. And so that's just a concern that I've seen in other jurisdictions, and so that's something that you might want to consider. So, again, to tell you how the Section 8.01030 is written now, it just says that the county authorized inspector receives the complaint. And so the only suggestion I would add is that we require that it be in writing and that it be signed by the person. And so if the board has any comments on that.
May I turn back to the board?
And this is the time to discuss as much as we can and get a solid idea of what the ordinance says. So.
Mr. Whitten wants to chime in on this.
Okay, I would recommend to the board that we follow Bob's suggestion that they be written and signed. It's often difficult to accurately proceed with something that you really only have a verbal. I mean, verbal stuff happens all the time. As far as county staff is concerned, I'm going to be a fairly strong advocate. To the best of my knowledge, I'm looking at least 7 staff people in this room that are residents of Story County and taxpayers of Story County. And I believe, to the best of my knowledge, the 8th one may not live in the county but still owns property in the county. We have rights too. And I think by taking that away, we're abrogating those rights and eliminating our right to say, hey, there's a complaint. I think the process is pure enough and defined enough that, you know, let's say Chief Hames has a complaint. He's not going to be the adjudicator on this. It's going to go through a process of going to the nuisance officer, to the hearing officer, and whatever other appellate rights there are. So, in my opinion, the subjective enforcement is not that big of an issue, if an issue. About the only one that could theoretically taint the process to any degree, I guess I'll say two, would be the supervisor of the department that oversees the nuisance officer, in this case, right, Dean Haymor, and me. And if the board wishes to preclude either of us, and not Dean by name, because we may move this to another, you know, department, but if they wish to preclude or exempt the county manager and the supervisor for the selective enforcement concerns that Bob mentions, that would be an alternative.
If the board thinks that's a reasonable resolution of this issue, I'll go ahead and make the change of adding written and signed. But I'll also make it clear that county staff may initiate a complaint.
Okay, that's what my next question was going to be, too, is because there are going to be people who are going to be reluctant to file a nuisance complaint, fear of retaliation. And so at that point, can the nuisance officer go ahead and sign the complaint himself? I mean, if it's a blatant nuisance, I mean, if you drive by it every day and you see that it's a blatant nuisance.
Alternatively, could we redact the complainant's name from the process?
I think it's important that we have a identifiable person that
that makes the complaint. And it's most important if we end up going to court, because that person would be the witness in the case. And so I think it's important that we know who that person is. Again, if there is a criminal case, the person is protected until the case is resolved. We can keep the identity of the complainant confidential until there is the court case or something. But I would say that it's important to have an identifiable person as the complainer. So I would prefer to leave it as that.
Did you want to weigh in, dear?
I just think I agree with Bob, especially when you get to a level of criminal. Number one, it used to be like the old dog barking cases in person, where there would have to be two different complainants that had to come forward for us to be able to go criminally on it. And although they don't want their names mentioned, you have to have some place to start, or anonymity is not going to get it in a criminal case. And I think in civil, as far as, again, just being able to identify.
Can you address my question then? If the nuisance officer arrives upon a scene of something and he sees it's a visible nuisance, same as if it was a criminal case and a deputy sheriff showed up on the scene and he sees that the crime is in progress, because somebody called him, they don't have to have the name of the guy that called him if the sheriff sees that the crime is being committed. It's right there in front of him, right?
If the county employee wants to sign the complaint, I think that's
right.
And then available to okay. them.
That's that was a viable option. So there are different methods to get to the end result.
The second general concept was the independent hearing officer. So this is new. We currently don't have an independent hearing officer in the code. And the more I thought about it, the more I came up with some questions that I thought should be discussed. One is, and I don't have anything in here, is whether they should be paid or not. And so if the board agrees that they want the ability to pay these hearing officers, we can set it up so that is something that can be done by resolution of the board, and we can put it into the ordinance, and that would allow hearing officers to be paid. Again, I think the change was in the first reading. But the idea was to have more than one hearing officer so that we'd have a sort of rotating list, and that would give some more sort of independence to who is the person that has been chosen. The other thing that came up was whether we should have some minimum qualification for the job. I would understand that the board would choose somebody that has experience in the area, but the idea is, do we want to put some minimum qualification for the job into the ordinance? One of the things we could have is that they have experience as a hearing officer. We could have an easy way is to say have a lawyer do it. I'm not so sure that that's would fit here, as opposed to say a larger jurisdiction.
God, there's already too many of you guys calling on planners.
I was waiting for it. Here it comes.
And I guess. Is the board interested in having minimum qualifications or not?
Have we explored the idea of having a hearing board as opposed to a hearing officer individual?
No, we haven't really discussed that.
You know, we have a board that hears, for example, Marshall, didn't you have a board hearing this morning
on the tax issues for equalization?
Monday morning. Yeah.
So there's a board.
Last Friday morning, too.
How many board members are on that?
Three.
Hearing board.
Yeah.
My thought, it might be for a, and maybe there's different levels. Maybe there's different levels of nuisances, but to me, you create a board as opposed to an officer might be in the better interest of the community.
And I would point out that the county does, under the building code, have an appeals board, and the county has approved that ordinance. So there is the potential of doing an appeals board, but that's somewhat limited to construction issues more than general
nuisance.
Who sits
on the appeals board for the county?
I believe, have we impaneled that yet?
Yeah, I don't think that's been done yet.
It should be a contractor, should be somebody from the general, and that should be somebody from the government.
So perhaps that's an alternative. You have a hearing officer with an appeal board. Of course, it's going to be appealed generally, I suppose.
Yeah, and we could look at this. I think one of the things, I'll tell you what my proposal was. It can be applied, I think, conceptually to a board rather than to a singular officer. Would be perhaps to solicit, we don't want it to be county employees, okay, that's the first given. I think it should be a public board, a public body. Ideally, what I would recommend would be, if we were going to go to an individual hearing officer, that we solicit applicants, much the same as we do for participation in the Planning Commission, the DCTC, any of these, through the advertising process. And we hope to gather at least one individual from each of our residential neighborhoods. And we could look at trial, although you guys have iron type CC&Rs,
right,
that, you know, probably would make us moot out there for the most part. But we could impanel at least a group of officers. And then let's say you have a complaint in Mark Twain. It would be our intent to not pick the resident from Mark Twain, because this is in their backyard and could put them in an awkward position one way or another, but to pick at least one officer from elsewhere. Now, you could certainly do that with the board. You could, you could pick four, and I think the commission should pick them, and then we could use a board of three from everywhere but the residential neighborhood where the complaint is.
That's an interesting idea.
But I think, Bob, you've already got the appeal procedure in here, that if the hearings, if the property owner doesn't agree with the hearing officer, it would appeal to the Board of County Commissioners.
I think I'm confusing this by calling out the Board of Appeals, and the way the ordinance is set up is there is a hearing officer, and then from the hearing officer it goes to the Board of County Commission as an appeal of that. And so I think by calling out the Board of Appeals, I've messed things up a little bit. And so
that's right.
So the process that currently exists is if there's a complaint, there's a notice. The clerk sets up a hearing. There's a hearing officer. The inspector and the owner come in, present evidence. There's a decision by the hearing officer. If the owner doesn't like the decision, they can appeal to the board. The board would hear the appeal, and it's on the grounds of whether there's substantial evidence presented to the hearing officer to support the decision. So you wouldn't have a new hearing in front of the board itself, and it would only be if they wished to have an appeal. So I think what Commissioner Gilman was talking about was, instead of having a single hearing officer, is to have a board at that level to hear the issue. And that's a good possibility. I think that's something
that
could be looked at.
I like Snap's thought, whereby we would have a hearing officer from each one of the neighborhoods. But if your neighborhood is on the docket, then that particular hearing officer would stand down on that board. Is that too complex?
I think through Dean's office we can manage that, because it's basically going to go from Dean's office to a hearing board. And I think what I would suggest, so that we, and we're obviously going to have one more second reading on this one.
Yes.
What I would suggest is we solicit for candidates from all of our residential communities, because there could be more than four. There could be five. Certainly, we don't want to leave out Painted Rock, although we could amalgamate them into the River District. But we select a panel, and then we convene a board of three, a hearing board of three, that is does not have the resident from that particular district. And that's doable, right, Dean? You know, you may have an absence. The good news about having five, well, you could even have seven or eight if you really wanted it. You know, then if you convene a board, we did have great difficulty with debt management on Monday morning because, you know, because of a potential absence of one person. So
the only thing I would suggest is that it be done by the ordinance so that we do, say, pick four people and then convene the board of three, not with the local person there, just so we don't have somebody that might be the county manager picking the people that are going to be on the board.
No, the commission would appoint four.
Well, they would appoint the people to the position,
yeah, to the
but
board.
Each individual board that comes along for a nuisance problem,
okay,
we would want the ordinance just to be able to say these are the three that are going to hear this matter.
But do we have to fix the number of potential not participants in the board, but people eligible to participate? Because I could see, as big as the Highlands is, mm-hmm, I wouldn't mind having a couple. You know, and then if you've got a nuisance in Virginia City, which God knows we certainly do, then we might probably only pull one from the Highlands, but if the one we want to pull is not available.
So who's doing the pulling?
The commission
issue
appoints to the pool, and then whatever we can spell out, it can be Dean's office, it can be me, I don't care.
And so just to echo the comment is what we're trying to do is make this an independent board that nobody can say that it's been stacked or anything.
Right.
And
right.
So my preference is to make it just a matter of law that you have a certain number of hearing officers, and then you convene a board of a specific number, just so the board or the county manager or dean doesn't have to go appoint the specific people to hear a nuisance that comes along. And I'm not sure how often this is going to happen. It doesn't seem to happen very so far. It hasn't happened very often. So I'm hoping it's not going to be something that's a regular procedure. But
well, and one of the things we talked about before when we were putting the nuisance ordinance together is the real word here is independent. So what is independent as far as the nuisance? Because nuisances, they start getting personal with people, and now all of a sudden you've got a board, and then so-and-so knows so-and-so, even though they don't live in the same district, because this is a small area and a small town where a lot of people know each other. So I think Pat and I were talking about the fact that, you know, it might be somebody that you might, as an independent hearing officer that has experience in this area outside the jurisdiction, so there wouldn't be an issue coming before the Board of Commissioners on appeal saying, you know, as the applicants go, well, I know this person, they don't like me personally, they're biased towards me, and I don't really have a nuisance. And so that was one of the things that we were truly trying to alleviate. And when we were, again, talking about the difference between a civil and a criminal action, I think that's one of the reasons that we were talking about a appeal officer that had experience in these types of areas. So they were experienced, they had knowledge, they know the ordinances, they know the law. And then the appeal process, when you did get to a board, if there was a problem between the two, would go before the Board of Commissioners. So that was one of the things that we were kind of mirroring, at least as far as not a judge per se, but a hearing officer that was independent. So we didn't run into a lot of conflicts, because the more people you get on this board, to start out with that are in the community. Just because somebody lives in a different area does not mean people know one another. So that was kind of one of the reasons why we were going with the independent hearing officer.
One.
So what I would suggest is that I write up an alternative to have a hearing board instead of a hearing officer, and try to set up a pretty foolproof method of choosing the board out of the eligible hearing officers, that the board would appoint a group to start out, and that we would have some sort of process that would fix who would hear the matter.
And then it would also be my recommendation that we take what Ann explained and try to put that as an alternative too. That will have costs to it. You're not going to get that outside hearing officer most likely for free.
Right.
And that's fine. You know, I mean, if it costs us $250 or something to do it, you know, perhaps it can be something even that we can put upon. I know in part when there's appeals for SUPs and things like that that have been denied at the Planning Commission, the aggrieved is required to put the money up front.
Right.
You know, to process the appeal.
Right. And then I currently have a $100 fee for an appeal, and so we could add costs to that.
Okay.
Costs of the...
And one of the things we might want to look at in other jurisdictions when they have... what is the judge pro per, not pro per, when they come
pro tem.
In? So when they have pro tem, they have certain things where, let's say that we wanted to hear three nuisance items in a morning, that a pro tem generally it gets paid a certain amount per half day per day. That's usually like in even Washoe County, like $100 for a morning. So that would be something that if we look around to surrounding jurisdictions on somebody that we could basically hopefully line them up and tell people what they're going to get paid. Not a bad idea that we could look into it to see what surrounding jurisdictions are paying their pro tem judges or hearing officers.
So you're thinking the hearing officer would come from outside of the county?
Right.
It could. That would be one way to make sure that they didn't have any preconceived ideas about what's going on.
We have some pretty rigid timelines in this thing, too, as I recall, as far as what has to happen by when should there be an appeal.
Right.
Would it be prudent to consider the board appointing more than one hearing officer?
Sure.
Independent?
It
currently does have more than
okay.
one hearing officer to be appointed.
Well, and that's one of those things, like when you're talking about a pro tem judge. Pretty soon what you do for a pro tem judge is that an application goes out in Washoe County if you want to be a pro tem judge. You fill out the application, see if the board accepts you as a pro tem judge, and then there's a list. So you're not just confined to one person. You have a list to choose from in case somebody's unavailable, especially, you know, like Pat was saying, depending on if somebody's with the timelines that we have going here, we don't want to limit ourselves to such a small amount of people that we're not able to get the job done.
Well, if you have the list, and if you did have a conflict in your family, or so many folks in Northern Nevada are interrelated, it's amazing. So, you know, then you could analyze the conflicts and conflict
right.
out, perhaps.
So that will come back as the alternative between a hearing officer and a hearing board. And then you can decide at that point which one you want. The third one I have is funding, and this is sort of straying the field, and it's more Mr. Gallagher and Mr. Witten's. But the board might want to create a contingency fund for cleanup of nuisances. And the idea is that normally counties don't have anything set aside for this. And so if there is something that the county wants to clean up and actually go after the owner to be reimbursed for it, you need the initial money to do the cleanup. And so while it's not part of the ordinance, I just wanted to to raise the idea that many times you can't force the owner to clean something up, and the alternative then is either to sit there with a lien on the property or go in and clean it up and put a lien against the property. And so it's just an idea that there is some sort of costs involved in cleanup, and that the board should be willing to do that.
And if I may chime in, I think thanks to Ann, we have a great textbook example of fees that are involved. Surely we can lien the property, but that doesn't mean the property is ever going to sell for that much, you know, and we're ever going to recover. But I think this can be simply done. I got a thumbs up from our comptroller. We'll work with between Ann and myself, looking at the cost that we spent on the last one, saying what's a reasonable amount, and then we'll insert it as a restricted line item in Dean's budget, I would think, since it's his office that is overseeing this, knowing that it can only be used for potential cleanup.
Well, and I love that idea for a lot of reasons. I think that one of the things that when I first came to the DA's office a couple years ago, I'd had a meeting with Pat regarding nuisances, and you know, his philosophy was to go civil and not necessarily go the criminal route. But as time's gone on and we see these nuisances that keep building over the years and just the havoc it causes, to like even Virginia City, I think Pat had given an example of, or one of you had, of the trolley that goes around. And when the trolley goes around and is showing everybody Virginia City, and you're going by these houses with these nuisances in front of them, and you have no bite to be able to have the person clean them up. You can get a lien against your property, but that doesn't mean that they have to clean it up. So with the contingency fund, at least we have an opportunity and an ability to clean up the nuisance. Because it's one thing to just say, here's my piece of paper, and it is not worth the paper it's written on. So I really love that idea that we would have some sort of contingency fund that we can actually get something done in the area of nuisances.
Work on that no matter what with our comptroller. That's a good idea regardless of solution.
Do
you believe a pro tem judge would have more clout as far as delegating to a defendant to clean it up? Or
that, I think it works, and let me tell you that in cities, the municipal judges are designated as the hearing officer in nuisance cases. Since this is a county, we don't have the same ability to do that. But the legislature has decided in cities that it's a municipal judge that should hear these matters. And so that's another alternative, is to have somebody like that. Right.
So. Yeah, there are methods, and I think an experienced person is really like a hearing officer that works specifically in nuisances. It's like what's happening in a lot of the jurisdictions, let's say small claims, that somebody is appointed as a small claims officer, and they've got a lot of experience. That would be what we are looking for here. So be it a pro tem judge or be it a experienced hearing officer, I think that hopefully they carry the same weight because they know what they're talking about and have dealt with these types of situations before and maybe do have some methods to have people, I don't know what those methods are yet, but that they do have methods based on their experience on having people clean up their nuisances without the county having to jump in and pay for it. But at least either way, we have the ability, hopefully, to get it done. That's why we've been working so hard on this nuisance ordinance, because I think everybody's tired of just having an ordinance that has not really been practical, that it's never been able to get the job done. So that's really what we're looking at. Let's put a practical ordinance in play that we actually get something done with it.
So if I may ask before you sit down, so that I'm clear, I like the pro tem idea. I think it's they're skilled professionals. May we use, though, and I may be mixing my courts, in the district court, I don't know if there are pro tems. I know there are senior judges.
Right.
I would purport that those are more expensive people. For the level of stuff I think we're talking about, if we could use pro tems that typically come out of the justice court system, the Judge Browns, the folks like that, I think that would be a very appropriate solution with integrity.
Well, and the other thing we can do with that in mind, I really like that idea, because there are lists of pro tem judges that have had to qualify to be one, like let's say in Washoe or Carson or all of these different areas where they are pro tem. And generally, I can look into what they get paid for half a day, because I know it's not over the top. And it's something, like you say, where they've had experience, they're listening to both sides, they have to make a decision, they have to get somebody to follow their order or ruling. So I think that all sounds great.
And no disrespect, but I think it would be fair, again, to make sure that the system, we do have a current pro tem that's a resident of Story County and previously served as our Justice of the Peace. I'm not thinking of Jack right now. But I think it would be good to, again, exempt or preclude any prior serving Justice of the Peace in Story County so that these are being heard by the Judge Browns, the Judge, I can never remember the guy up at the lake.
Judge Johnson or Judge McMorris?
Yes, there's a great guy up at the lake that I loved.
Yeah, Judge McMorris is good.
McMorris was the Judge of the Lake. Well, and you know, Pat, I think along the lines of that, it would be the word independent.
Yeah.
So it's going to be the independent that I think knocks out somebody that was a justice of the peace prior to this time.
So the only concern I have really is how do we choose the judge pro tem to come hear the case, and so. We can talk about it.
Yeah, how does Justice Harrington do it now?
We could go to Judge Johnson if he's available. So there's a list. Judge Johnson, then go to Judge McMorris.
Mancuso is who I was thinking of.
Oh, okay. Incline. Okay, yeah, he's a good judge, too.
So we could just have an approved list and maybe pick them from that.
Yeah, and I mean, distance sometimes is an issue. I mean, I don't necessarily want to be forced to pick, you know, a pro tem that lives in Ely, you know, and we're going to get next to travel and everything out
here. No, and I think you have the right to pick your pro tem judge on just that alone.
See, I think they would probably want to agree to do it before we put them on the list.
Absolutely.
And so and that's something we could do. Let me talk briefly about civil penalties, there's a section of NRS that allows a county by ordinance to impose civil penalties on somebody that has a nuisance. And just to make clear, a bunch of different branches that you can go out on. So initially, we have a county process where the inspector cites the person. You come in and have a hearing. There's also a section, and let me read it. The authorized inspector may alternatively refer the notice of nuisance to the district attorney, and the district attorney may commence a civil action to abate, remove, or enjoin the violation and or commence a criminal action in the manner provided by law. So if the inspector is not getting any progress, they can refer it to the district attorney to file a lawsuit, and that can either be civil or criminal. The civil penalties are if a person goes through our county process where the inspector cites them, they come in, they have the hearing, and then they don't clean up the nuisance, there's the ability for the county to apply civil fees. And I think it set up $100 a day up to three times the value of the cleanup. So the way I see the process working is if somebody comes in, has a hearing, they don't clean up, the inspector can come back to the in a case that's filed, either civil or criminal.
Right, make sure.
So just to go back to the civil penalty part of it, I think the way the process is set up is that if somebody does not comply with an order to clean up, that the inspector could come back to the hearing officer or the Board of Commissioners if there was an appeal and the owner still hasn't cleaned it up, and they can ask that civil penalties be applied to this person. So it's an alternative to the civil case and the criminal case. It's civil penalties that the county can impose. And so the question I had was who should determine, you know, when to file these civil penalties. And it'll basically be up to the inspector, the county inspector, if they think that the person isn't cooperating, that they come back and ask for the civil penalties. Now, they could refer it to the district attorney's office before that, or if they think that they can handle it on the hearing level, they can go ahead and ask for these civil penalties. And there's a process set up in the ordinance to have a hearing and an appeal on these civil fees if the owner wants to do that. So there are several different ways to deal with this problem, and I just wanted to make sure that everybody understands the way it's set up. Are there any questions about the civil penalties, or
So we already have a provision in the ordinance that's $100 a day plus up to three times the cost to mitigate. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah.
Okay.
I
think then we've established what that is. I'm not a fan of putting fees in ordinances because then they're almost impossible to change. But based on that methodology, that's fine. I would tell you if we go the pro tem route, that the quality of the hearing officer, we've just amped up on steroids, and in my humble opinion, having seen the pro tems, and that they should be able to determine the amount. They're independent. Mm-hmm. Again, it's not the county determining the amount necessarily, and they're skilled paraprofessionals who are professionals at this.
Right.
Much the same.
And so the idea is that if you go through the process of say going appearing in front of a pro tem and they say yes, this is a nuisance, clean it up within 10 days, and the 10 days go by and it's not been cleaned up, the idea is that the inspector then can come back to the pro tem and say it's not been cleaned up, that we want civil penalties.
Can we front load that process though all in one hearing and say you have 10 days to clear it up or you will be subject to civil penalties of $100 per day, and the pro tem at that point determines not to exceed either one time, two times, three times, two and a half times, whatever at their discretion. I mean, now I think you've got the carrot and the stick out there versus having to do that process twice and pay for the pro tem twice.
And that, I think it would require a couple of little changes in the procedure, but I think that's a possibility that I could...
Would the penalties be stayed upon an appeal to the pro tem judge?
Yes, that's true.
Well, and I think very much like criminal, let's take a misdemeanor. A misdemeanor, everybody always knows that you have the potential of getting
6 months in jail and or $1,000 fine.
Up to.
And or. So in the civil world, I think it should be the same type of thing, that you want to set out the potential penalties that you would have civilly that you would have before the hearing officer. So everybody knows what they're up against. And a lot of times Jack was talking about is that all of a sudden, if you know you have this penalty that can be imposed on you, you're going to weigh it and say, maybe I should clean this up because I don't want to go before the pro tem. Here's what I potentially could get. And the fear of knowing what you could potentially get causes you possibly to have the want to clean up your property.
No, I agree. But even if it goes to the hearing officer, assuming the hearing officer is a pro tem, I think we can make this a one-step process,
Yes. Quite
honestly. That is an incentive by saying it's almost like deferred prosecution or whatever the other element is, where I'm gonna find you guilty,
a suspended sentence.
Right. Thank you. Right. You know, but I'm gonna suspend this for 10 days, 30 days, whatever is reasonable to mitigate, and if not, then the county's authorized to impose a fee of X.
Well, and see, that would be one of the penalties that you could talk about. That. They could have, because that's exactly what we do now. A lot of times that is the maximum, 6 months and or $1,000 fine. But many times, as everybody knows, it's a suspended sentence or it's a deferred prosecution or it's stayed pending you clean it up. And so, you get a drug evaluation. I like that.
And part of our process can be before that hearing, in anticipation of the hearing, is the nuisance officer, much the same as Ann did, you know, with Clean Harbors or whoever cleaned up the last nuisance, and the auctioneer, is we can get estimates to say our mitigation costs are going to be X, and then the hearing officer pro tem will know what those costs may be.
And there is a section in the ordinance that talks about how the county can abate and get paid back, and there is a process for that. And so I think it's something we can sort of weave into the text. Yes.
Earlier you made the brief comment that the hearing officer could then go call the pro tem to say this guy didn't clean up his yard. I would think that the hearing officer should probably go through the DA. The DA contacts the pro tem because there's probably going to be a case number assigned to this. Am I right?
Not unless the case has been referred to the district attorney. So the process, the basic process, is that the county inspector is going to ask for the hearing in front of the hearing officer, and if it's the pro tem, it would be in front of the pro tem.
That's one process.
That's one way to handle it, and that's the basic way that this ordinance has. Now, if the inspector is having no progress whatsoever with the person, they have the option of turning it over to the district attorney's office, who then has the choice between a civil case and a criminal case. Once it's been turned over, the county has nothing else to do with it, or county staff. Just the district attorney's office would deal with it under those circumstances.
But if we're going to the hearing officer approach outside the district attorney,
right?
You know, I think we should be crystal clear, at least in my opinion, I defer to you two. You know, the hearing officer should have no contact, the nuisance officer should have no contact with the hearing officer in order to maintain that independency until the day of the hearing.
Right.
I mean, you know, that's much the same as you approaching Judge Wilson or something and saying, hey.
And I think you're suggesting to have the suspended penalties put in at that time would keep the inspector having to go back and request those at a different time. And so I think that makes it cleaner. So I think that's a good idea.
I think Jack hit something there that I kind of like. There's going to be a case number assigned to it as soon as it comes into us. And then if it gets to that pro tem, I kind of like this office knowing what's going on
right
by our side when you get there. So I think we could just tie that together, working as staff and with that. But there's going to be a case number, unless we dump it all on the district attorney's office.
Okay.
It's a separate process. But I do think once we're getting to the pro tem, then these guys should be on our sides because they're protecting us also.
And I find what I've found working with Dean's office on some of these nuisances, you know, something gets red tagged, people clean it up. Dean goes out and talks to some of these people, and it gets done. So there are a lot of informal methods that have caused people to clean up their properties. So I think as far as like the what Dean was just talking about, when it gets to the DA's office, that means you're getting into a bad nuisance where nobody is complying. And so I think that everybody has worked together as a team to kind of get these things done at this point. We're just taking it to a new level and have a procedure so everybody understands what the process is going to be with them. And I find that the people that have structure and that read an ordinance and see what's going to happen, you have a better chance of compliance than, you know, something that just isn't coherent, which is, I think, what we have right now. Would you agree?
And just one final thought before I don't think I'm going to go through the specific sections of the ordinance, but the idea is that we have a consistent method with dealing with nuisances, and I think it's also important to make sure that the county has consistent paperwork or consistent forms that there's going to be a standardized form. When Desi Redmond was here, I helped her work up a letter of the notice of nuisance letter, and I think it was very comprehensive and good. And so I think the county does have forms that they can be using. I would just suggest that it would be a good idea to make sure that there's one consistent form that everybody uses. And I think that'll help in the long run.
And Dean's office, along with one or two others, are the role model of forms. I mean, they've got them out there for everything from building inspections to business licenses to that. And all that information from Desi did transfer over to Dean's office.
Right.
Okay, certainly we can review that with you, but that's...
That would be just a concern.
Yeah, that's mission accomplished.
Right.
Okay,
good. And so unless there's any questions, I'd ask you to open it up for public comment.
Any other questions?
No.
Okay. This time we'll open up for public comment. Mr. Phillips.
Good job. Oh, thanks.
Yeah, Mark Joseph Phillips, a Virginia City resident, speaking to agenda item 13. On the 2nd of February, there was discussion about this ordinance, and I made sure to get my concerns on record, but at the last meeting, your county manager make sure that the approval of the February 2nd meetings were taken off the agenda. So my public comment a month ago is not on record. And the approval of the February 2nd meeting wasn't on the agenda today. So... which means my public comment on February 2nd is a moot point now, and why bother?
Please make any comments you'd like.
And if I may address that, the approval of the February 2nd meetings is still being delayed. We've had absences in our office that extract the minutes from the information that's being recorded here. That has run behind. We still are running behind, but I would commit to Mr. Phillips that if he requests, I will have expedited and extract his comments that were going to go into the draft minutes placed into today's full packet, and we can also provide those as a matter of record going into the continuation date of whatever we continue to. Get with me after, and I'll tell you what I propose.
Any other public comment on this? Okay.
And so my recommendation, based on the changes that have been suggested today, is that we continue this to March 15th.
Okay.
10 a.m. here.
10 a.m. here.
Okay. So, Commissioner's looking for a motion to continue this item to March the 15th, 2016, 10 a.m. in this room.
I so move.
I'll second that motion.
Move and second to continue this item to March the 15th. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Okay, at this time we're going to go ahead and recess as the Board of County Commissioners and convene as the Story County Liquor Board. Sheriff, you want to join us up here? Okay, next up is item number 14. This is discussion and possible action. Approval of the second reading of the Gold Hill Hotels. Robert Wilkinson, in parentheses, request for a cabaret license as an addendum to the current license.
This Mr. Wilkinson has been a responsible license holder at a number of businesses in town for several years. As you remember, he recently took over the management of the Gold Hill Hotel. The cabaret license for their entertainment was just an oversight in the application that he made. So once pointed out, he came back in, made application, and just asking that that be included in his existing licensing.
Very good. Anybody have any questions on this license? Is there any public comment on this item? Hearing none, looking for a motion to go ahead and approve the second reading of the Gold Hill Hotels cabaret license.
I move to approve the second reading of the Gold Hill Hotels Robert Wilkinson request for a cabaret license as an addendum to the current license.
I'll second that motion.
We move in a second to approve this. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Thank you, Sheriff. At this time, we're going to adjourn the Story County Liquor Board and reconvene as the Board of County Commissioners. Next up, under Community Development and Planning, this is item 15 for possible action, Licensing Board second readings. Mr. Haymore.
Commissioners, I recommend that we approve for the second readings items A through K, as they have met all the requirements, and recommend that those be approved for Story County Business License.
Is that A through K?
They may so appear on your agenda.
A through A.
J and another A.
Yeah, there's a typo. There's a typo for Western Pacific Express, which should be K. Is that correct?
Okay. That's okay. About all items listed.
There we go.
And then I need to bring up some discussion okay. After you guys make that approval.
Okay. Is there any public comment on licensing? Second readings? Okay. Can I get a motion on the floor to go ahead and approve all listed licenses?
I'll make the motion to approve all listed licenses. Second reading.
I'll second that motion.
Move in a second. And you said there's discussion on this?
There's no. I got a discussion on another item on business license.
Okay. So it's been moved to second to approve all licenses. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries unanimously.
Okay. As the business license administrator for the county, we have taken in a license by Red Hawk. It was a company that was working out.
We need to agendize this.
Right.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah. This is we're going to get into specifics. Are we approving it today?
No.
Okay. Well, let's either put it on the agenda or address it.
Right.
Okay. Then all I'm going to I'll have to make an administrative decision.
Okay.
And I'll talk to the county manager.
Okay.
Right. Okay.
Okay. Well, we're under item number 16, which is public comment. You wish to bring anything up in the public comment?
No, not at this time.
Mark? Yeah, we've okay. Already consulted the council.
Okay.
Marsh?
Very good.
Marsh.
Oh, no, he's fine.
Oh, okay. I thought you were trying to stop you.
No, no, you're fine.
She usually has me in a headlock when she wants me to.
Sorry.
Okay. At this time, we're open up for public comment. Anyone? Ms. Bard, come on down.
Well, he's stopping. I guess I thought it was tapping my head. I was talking about
Nicole Bard, Story County resident. On the Highlands message board last week, somebody made the comment that they were trying to get, they're doing house renovations, so they need one of those porta dumpster things, that she contacted somebody in Reno to come up with one of those and was told by the company that Waste Management has an exclusive contract with Story County and they can't do that. Can you tell me about that?
That is correct. We have two franchise agreements with Waste Management. One is for the landfill exclusively, and the other is for refuse and trash pickup countywide. That is a provision that has been in those franchise agreements for decades that we have attempted to negotiate out, and we have been unsuccessful so far. But there is an exclusivity that Waste Management managed to insert years and years and years ago.
So we're subject to them telling us who we can do business with?
Well, the answer is simple, Waste Management.
Pardon?
In Story County, it's Waste Management. You may not be subject to, but we're subject to requiring any business doing business in Story County to be properly licensed and or franchised. In this case, we require that only Waste Management dumpsters be used. And trust me, it's a problem for us not only at residential areas. It's a pain in the neck out at the industrial park. It's a pain in the neck all over. But
no, so the answer is we can only do business with Waste Management. But my other question is we're a county. Can't we choose who we do business with and then contract with them? I mean, are we forced, like, having to do business with the mafia?
Well, we're,
I'm not kidding when I say that, because that's what this sounds like.
I won't answer that one in that regard or that couching, but I will tell you that my opinion is, and again, I can look to legal counsel, is we have a franchise agreement with Waste Management that clearly delineates that they have exclusivity on the matter that you're talking about, and we are obligated to honor our end of that franchise agreement.
And we will be looking into that once there's the renewal part of the franchise.
Absolutely.
When does the renewal come up?
I'll share my experience, and this is before I go to Story County. I thought I'd try to save some money and have a dumpster from a competitor drop one off. Well, it turns out that competitor pays Waste Management for the services.
So it is the mob.
So,
thank
so,
you.
So that's
got it.
It all goes through them anyway.
Thank you.
All right. We still have public comment open. Anyone else? No other public comment? This meeting's adjourned.
Yeah.